Thank you.
Take it away. Of Throwing Shade, Better Living Through Jewish Demonology. We are so excited to be here at the JCC of Detroit. Thank you so much to everyone who invited us out and to all of you for being here with us this evening. We're scared out of our minds because usually we're here doing this into, I need to stop breathing into the mic. Usually we run this podcast out of our living room, which has been beautifully recreated here.
The details are really pristine.
I would say that there is a surprising lack of cat clawing on the sides of the couch, yeah. Which I'm a little disappointed about, but we'll write a strongly worded letter to the management and it'll be okay. So we are Throwing Shade, and for the past year and a half or so, we've spent a lot of time with the darker forces inside of Judaism that you may or may not be familiar with. And producing a podcast. And so, hello everyone, I'm Miriam, and with me as always is Alan.
Hi.
Alan, how are you?
Baruch Hashem.
Yes! Okay, that is our signal that we are ready to dive in to our text and tradition and mine it for what goodness there is in there. I will also say, and here it comes, I am dealing with a touch of laryngitis here, so I have a little bit of tea, I have these very classy throat drops here. And I thank you all for bearing with me, because at some point this is going to turn into the Demonology Hour with Mickey Mouse, and everybody will be here with me. But great. So we were invited out this week in particular because what's happening around this time? Parshat Noach. Very good. Right. So we are. This week is Parshat Noach, which, okay, Halloween is coming up, absolutely. But actually, in the Parsha of Noach, we have one of Alan's and my favorite references to demons. Bet you didn't know there were demons in Parshat Noach. But what happens is, in the course of God telling Noah to go and gather all of the animals and bring them into this, what must have been a very stinky ark, there is a commentary about a particular phrase, which is about bringing on kol hachai, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. We don't have the text in front of us, and we don't know. But the commentary that Rashi brings at that point is kol hachai, right? We need all of the living things. And so Rashi pipes up, and he says, afilu shadim, even the demons, right? So right there, we've already learned a little bit about demons, first of all. that they can die in a flood, just like the rest of us, right? What else?
Yeah, so it's Rashi, is that commentator. It says, Afilu Shadim, when God is telling Noach to bring all the living creatures onto the ark, Rashi is explaining, even the Shadim need to come out of the ark.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that even if you look, a careful reading of the text will tell you that Noach wasn't actually the one who brought the animals onto the ark. They came of their own accord. The same actually...
Animals just do whatever.
Well,
they're
cats maybe.
Yeah.
But the Shadim as well. The Shadim who actually Hashem sort of ushers them onto the ark. It wasn't as though Noach had to go get the Shadim.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to clarify one thing that you said. The Shadim can die in a flood. I want to look at if you look at the text again pretty carefully, you'll see, and this is other commentators, other Mefarshim bring this as well, that the water wasn't just like coming down from the sky and landing on the ground
right.
and filling it up. The water was in the atmosphere as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the realm of where the Shadim are.
Yeah.
So they were in danger, not of drowning like, you know, because of gravity like a human or an animal would,
mm-hmm.
but from the atmosphere there.
Right. They prefer a dry heat.
This is from... Right.
Shadim do better in Arizona. No?
I
don't know.
The Midbar, right?
In the Midbar, there you go, exactly.
The wildernesses of Arizona, I don't know. But yeah, so there's that. And Rashi gets this from Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah.
So. Exactly. So Shadim are everywhere in our tradition, and we will interchangeably use the term Shadim and demons. There are different kinds of Shadim. Demons is not exactly the perfect translation, but it's a good one, especially for this time of year. And since we were actually brought here because of Halloween, we figured we'll present a text this evening that has to do with something that you might see around during Halloween, and that is black cats in particular. Cats have really already become kind of a running theme that I didn't really expect.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a connection.
Okay, we'll dig into
animals
the psychology
in the ark,
of that later.
There were two cats.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what's your text that we're going to look at this evening?
Right. So this is a relatively well-known one, but we hadn't touched on it yet.
Yeah.
And I thought, what better opportunity than before our first live audience when...
there you go.
Yeah, I'm extremely nervous.
Let's try it with all these
probably
people.
Probably screw it all up. But yeah. Yeah, so famous Gemara in Maseches Brachos. As you can see, I have my Gemara with me. The mm-hmm. listening audience can't, but you can. Gemara Maseches Brachos, Daf Vav, where we get a bunch of different things about Shadim, including where they dwell, such as in the ruins and the wildernesses, like Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Wildernesses, ruins, Arizona.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't hate Arizona, I promise. Okay. Yes?
Okay. So, one of the things that's discussed there is, should one have the desire to see the Shadim?
Mm-hmm.
This is after a discussion, which we've covered in a previous episode, about why it is that we do not see the Shadim. Because if we did, we would be paralyzed from fear. They're all around us constantly. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them. It's really innumerable, and they're different castes and different powers and everything like that. So mm-hmm. if we could see them, we would be powerless, we would be paralyzed from fear. If one would want to, for whatever reason, see a shade, there are a couple of different methods that one could use.
Hmm.
The Gemara here on Daf Vav mentions particularly...
So the quick explanation of terms. Gemara, Talmud, is an interchangeable term in this case.
Yeah.
Right? So Daf is a page, yes?
Six.
And Vav is number six?
Yes.
Great. So everyone open your primers. Here we go. Okay, we're ready to go. Overachievers.
all our listeners are overachievers. You know.
I'm not sure how to take that.
Okay.
Let's go.
Anyway, like I said, relatively well-known one. Should one want to see Shadim, one particular method involves cats.
Specifically black cats.
Specifically a black cat, specifically a female black cat, specifically the afterbirth of the firstborn female black cat of a female black cat.
You know, I was going to guess that.
Yeah, okay.
And you just beat me to it.
Yes. If you should want to see the Shadim, you find this, placenta, you burn it in fire.
Yeah.
You take the ashes.
Yeah.
And you take a
Notice how they're all still here. Okay, great.
Yes. You would take the ashes a little bit, not a lot.
Mm-hmm. We're you don't want to overdo these things.
Right, and it's actually important because I do want to stress that we're learning this Gemara. There are a number of different ways in which the commentators learn the Gemara. We're going to learn it according to the way Rashi learns it. Mm-hmm. Rashi is,
classic.
As you figured out from the Noah reference, one of those who really digs the shadim in the sense that
and happens
believes
to be
that they're real, believes that they're...
Yes, yeah. Major medieval anyway. Commentator, lots right. of demons show up in...
Yeah, so the way Rashi learns is take just a few, not a lot of these ashes. You don't right. need to cover, you know, just a little bit
yeah.
and sprinkle them in your eyes. Uh-huh. and then, now this is important, you have to take the rest of the ashes, put it in a very solid metal tube container, mm-hmm. and seal it with a metal seal, mm-hmm. like a really good seal.
Yeah, wow.
And then you would be able to see the shading.
Does this sound like ingredients for like a really dark makeup company? I feel like you get that perfect smoky eye.
I don't know what makeup companies use for no. makeup. I mean, maybe the second born of a female black cat, but not the first born.
Okay, so this is where you're coming right from the Gemara here that they're saying, they're basically positing, let's assume you want to see a demon. So go through this,
right.
what feels like a very sort of cultish, not... May I offer not very Jewish feeling kind of process
right.
to be able to do that?
So it's interesting because it's actually not the only time cats appear in the Gemara.
Okay.
So and other Jewish texts. I'll mention just sort of, a little bit off topic, still cat related though, is...
We never go off topic on this podcast. I want you to watch yourself.
And also still related in other ways too. But... Excuse me, but yeah, there's a Gemara in Mesechta Shabbos that says, I'm trying to remember what it says. It says that if you offer menstrual blood to a cat, you can make a man impotent.
Okay.
Then another thing that is mentioned, so there's another thing.
Uh-huh.
Are you uncomfortable yet?
They paid $8 for this. Okay. Yeah.
There's another.
I was just surprised.
Okay.
That's all.
Well, this one's actually a little bit more on topic. Is that there's a Kabbalistic text that the name of the Makubal escapes me. I apologize, but who mentions that this particular Kabbalist believes that cats are in fact the reincarnated humans who have used the name of God in vain.
Wow.
What's interesting about that is that we already know something about Shadim and the use of the name of God in vain.
That's true.
So from the Gemara Masechtas Megillah, again, okay. this is another Gemara.
So from the Talmud and the particularly the tractate Megillah, which has to do with Megillat Esther that we read on Purim and
mostly.
A whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
They also go way off topic. There's a long tradition of Jews going off topic.
Yes.
So we're handing down the chain. Go ahead. Yes.
Right. We learn from that particular piece of Gemara that Shadim do not use the name of God in vain.
Right.
So, there's some relation there that you can see Shadim by use of a cat who is, according to one Kabbalist, the reincarnated person who used the name of God in vain.
Wow, that's heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had spoken, so in previous episodes, we talked a little bit about this idea of greeting a shade with the word Shalom, which is also a name of God, and forcing them to potentially use that name in vain, which they can't do. The Shadim are bound by the mitzvahs, right? Which is another issue that's come up in our conversations before.
Yeah. There are Shadim who are, but yeah.
There are Shadim who are.
Yes.
You know, yes, there's a whole rainbow of Shadim, just
basically.
Like there are many different types of people, so too is there diversity in shade life. Yeah, so yeah. Why do I want to see a shade?
Okay, before we get there, I just want to close out the piece of the Gemara, because
yes.
The question that I would have asked is, how do the rabbis know this? How do they know this formula for seeing shading? Then we'll answer your question.
That is also a fair question. Let's
yes.
tackle that.
So trial and error is the answer. The last piece
the good
of that
old
Gemara,
scientific method.
Right. The last piece of that Gemara is Rav Bebe Bar Abaya. Abaya was one of the great Amoraim, and his son was also, and he tried this, except he missed the part about putting the ashes in the tube and sealing it. And the shadim really harmed him really badly. So because he missed that last step. And so the Chachamim at the time they all davened, they prayed for him and he was healed, but they made sure to put that part in the Gemara because you got to do every step.
Wait, so the message at the end of that Gemara isn't, and also don't do this. The message is, if you're going to do it, pay attention to the details and do it right.
In a way, yeah.
That's terrifying and insane. Okay, yeah.
But your question is also part of that question.
Okay, so right? why do I want to see Shadim in the first place?
I'm going to ask you that question. Why do you think you'd want to see Shadim?
I mean, I don't, but I think there is an intellectual curiosity there that I perhaps may want to satisfy. I do not have a good answer to that question.
Okay. I'll lead you with a piece of Gemara that comes immediately before this piece about the black cat, is another recipe for seeing Shadim, which is not so direct as the one with the ashes and the black cat. It's a different method. I think we've maybe even addressed this in a previous episode. If someone suspects that there are Shadim around their bed at night, they put fine ashes around the bed and go to sleep. And in the morning, if they see chicken footprints in the ashes, they know that there's shading there.
Sure.
Okay. So.
Or a chicken.
You rationalists.
I know, right?
But we also know shading have feet of chickens. They cannot. That's the only part of their body that cannot shapeshift. So they all have chicken feet.
So there was a lot in what you just said there. We've talked a little bit before about how Shadim can shapeshift and can appear in different forms, including human form, but that the one part of their body that they can't change is their feet. So if you do happen to suspect that a colleague, for instance, is a Shade, then you want to kind of discreetly peek and check out the feet.
Right. There's a lot of great stories about that, including the story in the Gemara about Ashmedai putting on shifting his shape into that of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, and the concubines and the wives are not sure about what's going on here. They don't really think it's him, so they ask to see his feet, and then he knows he's been caught. Mm-hmm. So, because even Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, can't change the shape of his feet.
Right. It's interesting that that's like the point where they're like, you know, they've got somebody masquerading as their husband, but it's, you know, and something feels a little bit off, but they actually, like, they have to go to the lengths of let's check the feet to make sure that this is actually the case. But,
right. So why would somebody, first of all, want to know if there's shading around their bed? And then why would somebody want to be able to see them? Right.
Okay. Fair enough. So one of the things that we've noticed in the course of doing this podcast and having these conversations is that shadim show up at moments of extreme vulnerability.
Correct.
So, for instance, an example that we've talked about before is childbirth.
Right.
Right? Which is a huge moment of transition and a lot of work. and it's a potentially dangerous situation, sort of a liminal space. And so that's a place where a lot of lore, a lot of ritual, a lot of folklore has risen up around how to deal with that potentially dangerous situation. Right. So you'd want to, and those are the situations that Shadim tend to take advantage of. They swoop in and they see that vulnerability and they attack. So it may be in my best interest to know if they're around so that I could do more to protect myself. I can see that.
Yeah, that would be my main answer as well.
Right. So putting it around the bed of a woman in labor, for instance.
Right. But when you say extreme vulnerability, it doesn't have to be that extreme. Even sleeping is considered a vulnerable thing.
Right.
But as we've mentioned a number of times on the podcast, the single most effective way to protect yourself against the damages and the injury that Shadim can do is by keeping to the mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. And by doing the mitzvahs, you are, the word mitzvah means to connect. You're connecting yourself to Hashem, to God, and that is, so to speak, going above the heads of the Shadim, right? So, yeah, I did air quotes. You guys can see that. I can't remember.
audio medium.
Right. You're going above the heads of the Shadim, so to speak, so that's, you know, Hashem is going to protect you from the Shadim if you're doing the mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not sure if what you're doing is a mitzvah or not. Maybe a bed is a place that might be questionable, a questionable place. Oh, I should also mention, Shadim are also very territorial. So, if they think that this place is a place for them, they will fight for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've gotten into this a little bit. I want to close out a little bit on this fascinating text, and now you all have your homework, right? You can all go home and find yourself a placenta of a black cat or
Please
whatever it is.
Please do not do that.
And
not recommended. not for.
We're going to shift gears a little bit, and I'd love to. I'm gonna play a little game with Alan for the next couple of minutes. And so, during the when we do our podcast on our normal cat scratched up couch at home, we divide it into a couple of sections. We look at a text and we unearth where the demons are and what the meaning is and why this is important today. And then we also take some listener questions. We'll be happy to take your questions at the end of this conversation as well. But some of those questions fall under the category of what I like to refer to as Does It Demon, which is inspired by the Will It Blend commercials. Is anyone familiar with these? There was a series of commercials selling a very powerful blender.
That's not a 90s reference.
And I don't think it's quite 90s. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody can check me on this. But in order to demonstrate the sheer force of this blender, the guy selling them would just blend things that you really shouldn't be blending, everything from an Apple to an iPhone, right? You see what I did there? And so instead of Will It Blend, we have Does It Demon? So I am going to throw out some...
This is Miriam's favorite segment and Alan's least favorite segment.
It's my favorite segment. We're going to have such a good time. I'm going to throw out some examples of things that are a little on the unusual side in Jewish tradition, familiar but perhaps strange, and ask Alan to tell me whether it has anything to do with Shadim or not, and we'll do it in relatively quick succession. And you're going to be amazing. And I'm always deeply disappointed by these conversations. I'll just put that out there, that the majority of the time the answer is nope. But I'm hoping I hit on one or two here. So, Alan, are you ready to go?
Can I give a maybe answer?
No.
It has to be yes or no?
Yes, you can do maybe.
Okay.
I want the real answer. Also, lie to me and tell me that they're shading, because I'm really excited about demons. Okay, here we go.
The first one.
Okay, here's my first one for you. Breaking the glass at the wedding.
Ah, okay.
At the end of a Jewish wedding ceremony, there's this moment of stomping on the glass, and everybody says Mazel Tov, and like, why? But does it demon?
I think that after that wonderful introduction about how disappointed you are about these Does It Demon things, you will not be disappointed when I say that yes. In fact, breaking the glass at a chasen at a Jewish wedding does demon.
Really?
Yes.
Why? How? Tell me more.
Because the answer that we usually get is, oh, because this is a Jewish wedding, it's the most happy occasion we could possibly have, but we have to remember mm-hmm. the destruction of the temple, and that's true, and so because of the destruction, we have to be a little bit sad, so we break a glass that can't
right.
be repaired. And
very emotionally manipulative. And then we all say Mazel Tov.
We all say Mazel Tov, because it's happy again.
Great.
Just like because it's a happy occasion, we have to remember the sad thing. It's, in other words, the thing about the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed is not wrong. It is related.
The destruction of the temple in Jerusalem.
Right. Thank you.
Yep.
It's.
I got your back.
It is when things are so great and so happy. Mm-hmm. There are certain shadim. A lot of our listeners might be familiar with the Ayin Hara, which is a very ubiquitous and very sort of popular, I'll say, shade. Mm-hmm.
Ayin Hara, familiar?
So evil
the
eye.
So the evil eye, which is also a shade.
Yes. We haven't really got to that. We'll have to do some Ayin Hara stuff.
We do. You've done your obligatory. We'll have to do this in another podcast.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So we're at this really happy moment. We smash the glass and we're sad for a microsecond, and then we go back to the chasana.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the setup.
Yes.
Here's the thing, is that the Ayin Hara, along with their other Shadim who follow this strategy, if you will, as well, which is that, again, vulnerability. As soon as we feel like, oh, things are so great, we let our guards down.
Ooh.
So there are Shadim waiting at the chasana, right by the chuppah. They're waiting to attack. They're waiting to do some harm. Mm. Breaking the glass scares them all away.
They don't seem so tough anymore.
Yeah.
Wow, what do you know?
It used to be not stepping. It used to be throwing against the wall. Like, they used to make a big thing.
Wow.
Still it is a big thing, but, you know.
That's so cool.
So it does demon.
Yes. Ugh, first one, man, it's all going to be downhill from here. But I love that it's also, I mean, a wedding is also that moment of transition. It's not necessarily the kind of vulnerability that you associate with childbirth, for instance. But it is a change in status. And
right.
It is a moment that sort of opens you up to new things.
Right. And back to the Ayin Hara idea, like, you know, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, maybe some in the audience, might be familiar with, you know, somebody's crying over their children, you know, and it's a wonderful thing. Somebody would, don't give a kinahara, right? Don't make a kinahara.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Because if you're saying how great your children are or how great somebody else's children are,
our children are great, though.
Don't give a kinahara.
They're excellent.
So you're announcing, basically, I'm letting my guard down in the sense of my children or somebody else's children or whatever, we're letting this down because we're so proud you know. And that's really how we feel, but we can't let the Shadim know about it.
Got it. Okay, I'm going to go on to our next one. So how about salt on the Shabbos table?
Salt on the Shabbos table, I do not think so. I don't think it demons.
Okay.
Salt on the Shabbos table is reminiscent of the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. There was salt on the Mizbeach.
Sacrifices or the place, the altar, where
right.
the sacrifices were offered. Traditionally kept on the table, salt on a little bit of the challah.
Yeah.
No, nothing but demons. We put salt on the ground to see the chicken feet.
No, ashes, not salt.
Some people did salt.
That's true, actually. I do remember somebody telling us that.
Yeah.
Maybe they couldn't find ashes.
They should get a black cat. Okay, great. So how about covering mirrors in a Shiva house?
Yeah, that one's...
Okay, so let's give a little bit of context. So Shiva is the 7-day period of mourning after someone close to you has died. And traditionally, you don't spend a whole lot of time pruning and preening. You spend your time in contemplation, in connection with your family. And so the mirrors are typically covered with some kind of curtain or towel or whatever it might be. But is there a demon thing going on there?
Yeah, again, Avelus mourning is a time of vulnerability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the Chesed LaAvraham. I think it's the Chesed LaAvraham. Don't quote me on that.
This is being recorded
rabbi.
Forever.
Don't quote me on that. he brings that mirrors, so it's possible that a person could look in a mirror and see the image of a rabid barking dog. And if one were to do that, that would bring their vulnerability to the point where they could be susceptible to attack by Shadim.
Hmm.
And in a house of mourning, you don't want to make yourself susceptible. And so you just cover all the mirrors.
So this is actually what the text says.
You can't see the dog.
This is actually what that text says, is that in the mirror you might actually see a rabid barking dog?
Correct.
Like a real rabid barking dog that's being reflected in the mirror?
It doesn't have to be real, just the image of a rabid barking dog, which would make them susceptible to attack by Shadim.
Wow.
But obviously you don't want to... I mean, if I'm looking in the mirror and there's a rabid barking dog behind
you have
me,
other problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, fascinating. So a little bit of shade thing. I'm doing pretty well so far. What about shaking the lulav? Which honestly I find super weird.
You're welcome to find it weird. It is.
Thank you.
It is an extremely holy mitzvah that it's not specifically have anything to do with shading. It's a mitzvah. You're doing it. You're pushing away the shading.
Right. So on Sukkot, we take the four species and we shake them to the four corners, and it's kind of weird.
I disagree.
Okay.
In fact,
but it doesn't have anything
sense.
To do with shading?
What?
It doesn't have anything to do with shading, though?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge? Okay, we'll find something. We'll figure it out. My last one is Hamantaschen.
Okay.
Which I just don't like.
You don't like Hamantaschen?
I don't.
You're a Latke gal.
I'm a Latke gal. Yeah. Do they
you
demon?
You need to explain that one.
So we're from Chicago, and in Chicago for years they've held this very silly sort of faux intellectual event called the Latke Hamantaschen debate at the University of Chicago, where people who are giants in their field go and present using the tools of their field an argument as to whether the Latke or the Hamantash is the superior holiday food. So someone in physics may use
political science.
May use physics to talk about Latke versus Hamantash, or someone who is, you know, a feminist scholar may use their field. I am very solidly team Latke. So I would like Hamantaschen to be something demon. No?
I'm racking my brain. I don't think so.
That's very disappointing.
I mean, Hamantaschen
But there is a cool, like, Megillah Purim thing about Shadim that we can share.
There's a lot of cool Megillah Purim stuff about Shadim, yeah.
Do you want to do the one about Esther?
We mentioned this one in a previous podcast, I think, didn't we?
Well, let's touch on it very quickly.
Okay.
For the benefit of our studio audience.
Fine. Very, very briefly, there is a problem that the rabbis are dealing with in the Megillah. If you can remember the story, Ahasuerus is holding this, what's often referred to as a pageant, where he's trying to find the next queen of Persia after Vashti is gotten rid of. And the method by which he's doing that is he's taking basically every virgin in the entire empire and sleeping with them to see if they are worthy of being the queen. And Esther, who is a prophetess, knows that she needs to become the queen in order to ultimately save the Jewish people and everything. And how can she possibly do such a thing with Ahasuerus? So what's going to happen? She doesn't know what to do about it, so she goes to Mordechai. This text is in the Zohar. It's the Zohar Kodesh. Mm-hmm.
So as we've mentioned before, there are a lot of Shadim demons that show up in very everyday mundane texts, but there are also plenty that show up in more esoteric Kabbalistic writings, such as the Zohar. So this is where this one is from.
Yeah, and she consults with Mordechai, who is the head of the Sanhedrin. He knows all the languages, including how to speak to the Shadim.
He is a smart Hamantash.
They're a smart cookie? Is that what you meant
to
say?
Okay. It is. They got it.
Okay.
Okay, yes?
Okay.
10 years married, everybody.
So Mordechai does captures and summons a shade, a sheda, specifically a female shade.
A lady shade.
Who takes the, he coerces her to take the form of Esther and the place of Esther in the bedroom, the royal bedroom. And so Esther is saved from having to do anything, and Ahasuerus gets to sleep with the demon. And
it's a win-win.
Right.
Look at that. I have all kinds of questions. But they've already been addressed in previous episodes. That's all I got for you for Does a Demon. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Yay. I understand that you've got a little game for me, and then we'll do some Q&A.
I think it's only fair, right? I've never done this. We've never done this before.
Everybody in this audience is Team Miriam, by the way. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Okay. What's my game?
I think it's kind of easy. I don't know. The game is...
because you love me. Okay.
Yeah. The game is, who's that demon?
Name that shade.
Name that shade. It's a... I'm going to describe a shade. Mm-hmm. Maybe their powers, maybe something we know about that particular shade.
Okay.
Or shada. And you tell me the name.
Okay.
Okay?
Great. I will do my best.
Okay. And it's going to go in order of difficulty. I think we're going to try it that way.
Okay.
So starting with the easier one, this particular shade hovers over standing water and is, and if a person were to drink this liquid, would become blind.
That shade is an old buddy of mine named Shabriri.
Yes.
And it is the reason that, for instance, this cup of tea up here, not only does it have this top on because it makes it convenient to drink hot liquids, but also taking it off and leaving it out there would make me susceptible to demonic blindness. So I'm literally covered.
Okay.
Next question.
This particular shade was extremely well respected by the rabbis and Chazal and the Gemara mm-hmm. in the Amoraim.
Mm-hmm.
And
various generations of
yeah.
rabbis and scholars, yeah.
Yep. Made it all the way to Prague. And we also know that he would communicate with other shadim via extra long spiritual tube from one city to another. It's your guy.
This is my guy, Yosef Shade. Yosef Shada?
Shada.
Shada. This is Joe the Demon. I colloquially, we're buddies.
He has a name.
So
the rabbis named him Yosef.
Yes. So his name's Yosef Shada. And I refer to him as Joe the Demon because, you know, we're tight like that. But I think it's fascinating, actually, that there are so many demons that, first of all, are given such, like, normal, everyday names, like Yosef. And there's Yonatan.
Yeah.
Some other, like Joe and John. And that they become so friendly with the rabbis and they become these confidants or pets, as we've suggested. But Yosef Shada is one of my
Servants,
favorites.
Maybe, yeah.
Cool. What else you got for me?
Okay.
I hear these are getting harder.
We'll do two more.
Okay.
This particular shade is one of the kings of the shading.
Uh-oh.
We don't say his name.
Oh.
And he is more powerful than
How Ashmedai. Am I supposed to answer this question?
Because there's a way we get around saying his name, but you don't say his full name.
Okay.
He was more powerful than Ashmedai, the other king.
Okay. So, I can't say his name. But he is referred to as the Samech Mem.
Yep.
Or the Sam. Am I okay? I'm still
so
in good.
So far good.
Okay, great. And yes, extremely powerful and scary. We've talked before about the demon royal family. There are castes of demons. And Ashmedai is usually thought of as the head honcho. But there's someone even more dark and sinister and powerful than him, and that is the Sam.
Yeah, not to be confused with the Satan, which is a different thing entirely.
Not a shade.
Not
Does
a shade.
Not demon.
Right, very good.
There you go.
And last, I don't know if you'll get this one. I think I got you on this one. This one is, let's see, so she... Ooh. Is most powerful on Tuesdays and Friday nights. She uh-huh. goes out with
like
her,
most women.
With her legions of 180,000 other Malachi Chabala, angels of destruction or other demons.
Mm-hmm.
She was given those two nights by none other than Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa.
Mm-hmm.
Let me keep going.
Is this Lilith?
No.
It's not?
No.
I forgot her name. Machlat?
Close.
Agroth?
Yeah.
Oh. Thanks for helping Agroth, me out, guys.
Bas Machlas, daughter of Machlas.
Okay, so there are, whew, that was a tough last one. There are, in the demon royal family, there are four queens. Lilith may be the most familiar. Yeah, fans of Lilith? Yeah, yeah? Ooh.
No fans.
We don't like Lilith,
please.
Right. So Lilith is the most familiar, and she's got an amazing and variety of backstories and ideas about who she is and what she did and why she matters. The other three are a queen named Naama, who is interesting because there is also a Midrashic Naama who was thought to be the wife of Noah. Coming back to
different character.
This week's Parsha.
Same name,
different character, different Naama, but at the same time, interesting that she's given that name. And then the other two are Agras, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, what does Agras mean?
Means a number of different possibilities. The one that comes to mind is like a letter. Like
a letter.
Not like a...
Oh, like an egeret.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's a weird name. We'll have to talk to her parents. See why she was given that name. Maybe it's a family name.
Her mother was Machlas.
Her mother was Machlas. So Machlas is the fourth of the demon queens, and her name literally means something like plague.
Sickness.
Plague, illness, sickness, destruction. Yeah. Also not recommended for the baby name set if you got something coming along.
Yeah.
How'd I do?
3 out of 4.
Yay. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. Awesome.
Get a Rubik's Cube or something. I don't know.
Get a Rubik's Cube. Yeah, yeah. And somebody's voice on my voicemail. Amazing. So we would love to open the floor up to any questions that may be coming up in your head about anything that we've talked about so far or about Shadim, Jewish demonology in general. What's on your mind? Yeah.
As you were talking about it tonight, I was interested in the chicken feet.
Yeah.
That the demons have. It is, metaphorically, their Achilles heel. And I was wondering if there's a connection either between those stories or some explanation for feet, why they're important in that way.
Yeah, great question. Yeah. Thank you. So so the question was about the chicken feet. And why chicken feet? Why is it important? What's the connection here?
So I'll start with why feet. We do have a text. Don't remember which one, but we covered it in a previous episode. Mm-hmm. That the feet are important because they connect us to the realm. They connect the shading to the realm to our realm, right? So we actually mentioned earlier in the episode that they're up in the upper atmosphere, but they're vertical, somewhat like we are. And that their feet are closer, and so that's the one part that's
like
most,
literally grounding.
The most physical aspect of their, because it's closest to the physical realm. Hmm. So it's harder to change, right? I can't shapeshift because I'm physical. My body is physical.
Right.
But they can because they are mostly not. But the closest part of them is the. So yeah. Hmm. Why chicken feet? Is that the other part of your question? I don't know. They are weird looking dinosaurs. They think the T-Rex had chicken feet.
Little teeny feathers.
Yeah, right.
That's also a thing.
Yeah, does that help? Does that answer your question?
Sure, thank you.
Okay.
Cool. Great question. Other thoughts? Yeah.
So the feet again.
All about the feet.
Okay. The feet have anything to do with the rest of the body? Are they the same? If it's a chicken feet, is it a chicken body and head?
Oh.
Great.
So let's get into what's the rest of the body? What's going on? This is such a Jewish conversation, by the way, too. Somebody next is going to ask, well, how many inches up is it?
Right.
And it's like, do I have to wear a dress that goes all the way?
Right. Yeah. That's a great question. The answer is it depends on the caste, C-A-S-T-E, right? Where in the hierarchy of the shading, the particular shade we're talking about, falls. So I should back up and say that there is a hierarchy of shading, just as there's a hierarchy of angels, malachim. Mm-hmm. They're the more powerful ones, like Mary mentioned, the demon royal family would be up at the top of that, with the sam sort of being at the top of that. And then down at below, there are all the myriads that are surrounding us all the time, and that sort of thing. Depending on where they are is what their body looks like, or what they are made of, or what possibilities they have to shapeshift into. Interestingly, though, I cannot think of a single text or story where a shade chooses to become a chicken. And so the rest of their bodies are, for some reason, their feet are, but I don't know, maybe that's why they don't want to be the rest of their bodies to be chickens. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or they are, and just nobody knows about it, so it was never written down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know if that helps answer your question. They're all different kinds of things, though. They can take the form of humans, like I said, King Solomon,
right?
Except for their feet. They can wear shoes. Yeah, they can cover their feet, but they can't change their form.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Okay.
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 I saw one over here. Yeah.
Were Shadim ever people, or are they? Oh.
Oh, I love this question. So the question was, were Shadim ever people, or have they always just been shading, right? And so there are a number of origin stories as to where the shadim come from. One is that they were created at twilight on the sixth day of creation, right before God clocks and, you know, calls it quits. So there's a number of things that are said to have been created in that liminal space, right? We're talking about shifting and transition and vulnerability. And one of the things is this set of souls. Is it nefesh?
Yeah, it's nefesh chaya. Yeah.
This set of souls that are made, and then they just don't get bodies. And then God's like, oh man, Shabbos, I got to get home. And so that's one origin story for the demons. But there's another origin story for the demons that actually has to do with Migdal Babel, which has to do with the story of Babel.
The Tower of Babel, yeah.
That, you'll tell me if I'm getting this right. So there's the, are we reading that this week?
Yeah.
That's this week. That's amazing. Great. So in Parsha Noah, which I know, there's the story of Migdal Babel, which is the Tower of Babel, where all the nations are coming together to build this big, monument to themselves and how awesome they are, to try and reach up to the heaven and be like God. And God's like, no, honey. And so disperses all of those builders and changes their language so they can't communicate with one another. I feel like this is a very important story for our time. And those participants in the building of the Tower of Babel are said to have been changed into shadim, that was part of their punishment for the participation. And so that's another one of the origin stories.
Yeah,
I basically get that right?
Yeah, basically. And there are other ways too. I mean, every time you do an avera, a person does an avera, chas v'shalom, they create a shade.
Like God forbid.
They're innumerable.
Right. So. No one in this audience is doing any averas, though, so we're good.
If you're asking, though, if there's like a specific person who became a shade, is that maybe what you're thinking, or?
Why don't you answer that question?
I would not go so far, because we do. But it's a good question as well, because we do have an example of a person who became a malach, another angel, whose name we don't say, but for a different reason. It has to do with power.
Although if you watch the movie Dogma, then his name gets said over
right,
and over.
Yeah, so. Whatever.
Great question. Others? I'm going to come to the side. Yes?
So going back to when you start with Halloween.
Yeah.
It seems like in the secular world, kids know all about Halloween from the earliest ages, and parents are teaching them all of the Bubba Mises about Halloween. So as a Jewish parent, I never knew I should teach my kids this. What age do you recommend we start teaching our kids about the shadim?
Thank you for that question. I am fascinated by your framing. So the question was, kids grow up learning about Halloween in sort of general secular culture, and if it's this much a part of Jewish tradition, what age should kids start learning about it?
You're passing the question on to me now.
I pass all the questions to you.
You took the one about Migdal Babel. Okay. Before I get to what age should you start teaching your kids, I'm a firm believer, by the way, that every kid is different and you have to judge by, even stories in the Torah itself, teach Torah for sure at an early age, but,
in an age-appropriate way.
In an age-appropriate and a kid-appropriate way, because every kid is different. That said, absolutely, this is a part of our tradition as much as any other part of our tradition. And it has been covered over by what's called rationalism, right? Maimonides is a big reason why we don't teach this now, because he was a rationalist, right? And he didn't believe in shading. He wanted to get the Jewish people in the Middle Ages in Europe, which is, if you can imagine, this was part of their lives every day. He was trying to get them to stop doing stuff, trying to avoid shading, just start doing mitzvahs. In that sense, we've come a long way in the sense of doing mitzvahs as opposed to thinking about shadim. However, I think it's to our own detriment because we're ignoring this whole part of our tradition, which is the shadim that are there. And there's still a lot that can be learned from them. Another reason is Americanization, Westernization, secularization, Haskalah, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, takes all this and puts it in the category of superstition. And that's a dangerous thing when you're talking about religious texts, when you're talking about part of our tradition, you know, that is right there next to halachas about Shabbos or halachas about, anything. It's right there. It's right in there in all the texts. You don't have to look far for the shading. And then with regard to the part of your question about, putting this up against, witches and goblins and vampires and skeletons and I don't know what else from Halloween, it's important to keep in mind that Halloween is, it has its origins in paganism. It's become a Christian holiday. Over time, it became a Christian holiday. But I'll be perfectly frank and honest in telling you that in doing our research for this episode, we wanted to try to find something related. And I think with good reason, there really isn't. I mean, Halloween is certainly in the modern sense with the parties and if anything, I think the Purim, the way it's celebrated by Jews is the closest you get to Halloween, but it's the exact opposite. You know, the kids on Halloween, they go around from house to house and they take candy. They take treats. And on Purim, kids go from house to house and they're giving shalach manas. They're giving treats. And that, if anything, is the message that I would want to give across to my kids. Anyway.
And I would just add to that that something that I really love and appreciate about having done this deep dive exploration of shading for the past year and a half or so, which we started because I was in one of those liminal transitional spaces where I felt very vulnerable. I was having a really hard time professionally. It had been a really crummy year. I didn't know what was going on. I felt very out of control. And when the world is crazy anyway, you kind of turn to weird stuff to help make sense of it. And that's very much done it for me. Things are better professionally, thank goodness. And but part of what I've come to appreciate through doing all of this with Alan is we got to keep Judaism weird. You know, I think there's so much about our own tradition that we don't know. And there's so much that just can keep surprising us and bringing us joy and inspiration or confusion or any emotion is a good thing when it comes to your own tradition, right? You want to find that stuff that fires you up. And I think we do ourselves a real disservice when we sort of brush off any aspect of it. So whether you love it, whether you hate it, wrestle with it. And I think if anything is our message behind throwing shade, it's a lot about that. So we're coming to the end of our time. we're going to do one more song to take us out. We're happy to stick around and schmooze. Just a huge, huge, huge thank you to the JCC of Detroit, to Jamie here in particular, who is amazing and just, can I say she's a badass? She's a badass. Everyone here has been so kind and hospitable and accommodating, and we're just really grateful to be able to do this and to be able to share this with you, and hope we got you a little bit excited about a part of our tradition that we don't explore all that much. And whether it's demons or whether it's something else, find the thing that sparks you. We tend to end our podcast with an action item, right? Our Throwing Shade is about better living through Jewish demonology, so we're sort of trying to be the Oprah of Jewish shading studies. And I am, if I were going to aspire to anything. But I would say if I were going to, we look back on the conversation that we had and then pull out, what's the thing that we want our listeners to do with this? And for me, I think it really does come back to, like, find the thing that keeps Judaism weird enough for you to keep excited about it. And find the thing that sparks you and dig in. Whatever it makes you feel, figure out what that feeling means. How about you, Alan? Is your action item to do mitzvahs?
If you want it to be, I mean, that's a great,
What would your action item be for after this conversation?
This was something we didn't prepare.
I know.
Miriam's nodding very sinistery.
Sardonically.
Sardonically.
Maybe.
I don't know. Let's see.
Sartorially? Can I nod like a tailor? It's getting really late. Do you have an action item or you just want to play a song?
I just want to play a song.
Let's do it.
Okay.
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 Okay. From you all, we need a stomp clap. Here we go. Ready? Stomp clap, stomp clap, stomp. Throwing Shade, SHEYD. Just search us on iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, whatever you use. You will find us there. We also have a Twitter account, which is how we take questions.
This week sometime, probably.
Yeah, before the end of the week.